Hello, and welcome back to the Klaviyo Data Science Podcast. If this is your first time joining us, I hope you enjoy your stay. I'm your host, Michael.
And I'm your host, Zach.
Welcome to this year's November episode. November is both a big and unusual month in e-commerce, thanks to Black Friday and Cyber Monday. So traditionally, we've taken this month as a time to reflect on being ready for things to scale or break or generally get spooky. This month, we're focusing on an aspect of that process that we've alluded to, but never really covered in depth before. What happens when things actually do go wrong? Or put another way, if an incident occurs where part of your application stops working the way it's supposed to work, what should you do? How should you respond? To help us with that discussion, we've brought on three members of the team at Klaviyo who have been in this exact situation before. Let's go ahead and start with introductions. I'll ask each of you to give a quick introduction of yourself, the team you're on, and what you currently do at Klaviyo. Let's go ahead and start off with Laura.
Hi, everybody. I'm Laura Stone, and I run the SRE organization at Klaviyo. So at SRE, what that means to us is we are software engineers who do stuff in the domains of infrastructure and operations, and we make tools, services, and ultimately platforms to help the rest of the engineers at Klaviyo do their jobs securely, safely, efficiently, and at scale.
Excellent. Next up, let's have Ty.
Hi, I'm Ty Roca, and I'm an engineering manager for the catalogs, coupons, and custom objects team at Klaviyo. What we do is handle the storage ingestion of our customers' catalogs, things like product feeds and side effects like price drop, back in stock notifications, similar operations with coupons, where we handle assigning of coupons generating across our various e-com partners, and then custom objects, which allows our customers to fit their non-traditional e-commerce objects like reservations, et cetera, into Klaviyo.
Excellent. And Harsh?
Hi, I'm Harsh Mehta, and I'm a software engineer on the anomaly detection team within the intelligence pillar at Klaviyo. The goal of the anomaly detection team is to run statistical models on all of our customers' data that gets ingested within Klaviyo. And we want to detect if something is going wrong in our customer's account and then proactively notify this to our customers so that they can get it fixed as soon as possible.
Excellent. So Harsh, you've been on the podcast before. It's been a little while. Laura and Ty, this is your first time here. Welcome to the show today. Thank you for coming on. This is a really interesting topic. I'm excited to talk with you all about.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
So let's start by making sure that we're all on the same page here as far as terminology is concerned. What do we mean when we talk about an incident?
What I'll say is what every new Klaviyo should learn through onboarding, the way that we define it is an incident is any unplanned service disruption that's going to impact any user's ability to use a system.
That's right on.
So probably a really naive question here, but why do incidents happen? What causes them?
So at an organization like Klaviyo, operating at the scale that we operate at, the thing that we want to do within engineering is do new things for customers or do the same things that we already do for customers, but better, right? And part of doing that requires us to change the system, right? And changing these systems, because they are complex, because we operate at scale and our product itself is complex, anytime that we go to make a change to a system, there's the potential that something's going to go wrong. Now, that could be human error. That could be a change causing a system to behave in a novel way that it didn't before. It could be simply that we are adding more usage of that same thing, but our system isn't designed to handle that additional usage. And so any of these things could cause an incident. But it's really like, hey, if we didn't change the system, then we wouldn't have incidents, right? I like to make the joke of like, if you don't have any users, you don't have any problems. No code is the best code because then you don't have anything and it can't go wrong. But then at the same time, then we're not offering people anything. So really, change is the thing that causes incidents. It opens up the opportunity for something to go wrong.
I think the only thing I'd add is they're often, the bulk of the incidences are caused by changes, but you also do get incidences caused by things that you deem as reliable or trusted. At the scale that we use, we run a lot of instances at Klaviyo, and sometimes hardware fails. And that's something that we maybe didn't make a change, but we just hit, we have a bad database, we have a bad host. and you just run into problems at the scale, just you're eventually going to have something die on you, and you might not have built your system to expect that behavior. So that's why we also try to reduce the single points of failure. But still, sometimes something is running stable, you do an operating system update, or it just goes away for no reason. And so whenever you're in the world we're in, we're always still tightly coupled to other systems, other services, external providers. Gmail can have a bad day, Shopify can have a bad day, and that can have ramifications downstream. So even without the change, sometimes you can be surprised with what incidences you'll incur.
Yeah, we didn't make the change, but something changed. Yeah, it's a good point.
We occasionally get literary on this podcast. And honestly, incidents do remind me of the opening line from Anna Karenina, which is, all happy families are alike. Each unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. I think we just heard a little bit of that. When things are working, it sort of just looks like they're working until it doesn't. And once things break, I imagine it's in a way that feels genuinely unique in each instance in at least one way. So with that in mind, I'd like to ask, just the first step of an incident, recognizing that it's occurring, what sorts of mechanisms can an organization like Klaviyo use to know when an incident is happening, despite the fact that they all look a little bit unique?
A lot of it goes to, with any system that you have, you want to have a large bit of telemetry. Some classic things are high watermark things like, hey, is my CPU pegged? Am I getting in a much larger volume of requests? Is a queue backing up? So a lot of like metrics emitted on there can help you identify an incident. Another one that is very valuable is to have baseline monitoring too, which is, I expect a system to be doing some sort of number of operations to indicate, yes, this is online, it's behaving as expected. For example, at Klaviyo, we can say we probably are sending more than 10 emails every minute. And if you start to see that not happening, we know that there's something that's seriously wrong. So some initial telemetry is key to identifying the problems. And oftentimes, if you set in these alerts of like, oh, the slope of this queue burn is at this rate, that can be indicative and you can catch the incident before the incident even happens to begin that response. So that's an even better goal. You want to catch the incident before it becomes actually customer impacted.
Yeah. Bouncing off of that, when we think about observability, which I'm going to use as a word interchangeably with telemetry, there are three components to observability: metrics, logs, and traces. So all of these are data that a production system is outputting about how it's performing. And then you can combine just having that raw data with understanding the business value of that system. And then you would tie that together through thresholds. So it could be a low threshold, it could be a high threshold, it could be the absence of data being a threshold, saying, okay, I have this data coming in, I have these notions of when my system performs poorly based off of my understanding of the business and the system, and then I'm going to alert when those thresholds go above, below, when they go outside of the bounds of what is expected and what I know based off of my understanding of the system and its business value. So I would say that's kind of number one, is having good, what we would call monitoring, alerting, having good observability. And then past that, there's also making sure that whoever is on the receiving end of that alert knows what to do with it, right? So knows how to assess, what does this actually mean that I'm receiving this? What does this mean for our customers? And how do I determine who I need to tell and where I need to go next based off of that? So then there's like a training component, and frankly, also just like a lived experience component of like, you do it and you learn from that as well.
Yeah, just to add on to what Laura said, I think from a data science perspective, it is also important to know what the baselines for your models are. So for like the anomaly detection team, we have a good understanding of how many anomalies we detect on a regular day across all of the customers at Klaviyo. And nobody wants to wake up to see that all of our customers are getting alerts in their account on a particular day. So we have set up thresholds as to like what the baseline is for like how many anomalies we detect on a regular day. And then if it goes beyond that, then we want to see if there was like a change shipped to our model that is causing it to detect a lot more anomalies, a lot more false positives than before. So having monitoring set up on like your models, on your like statistical and data science models that you have in production is also equally important, apart from all the software metrics that you have on your CPU, memory usage, queue backlog, and so on.
I think we obviously touched on a number of different ways of recognizing an incident. And again, a somewhat naive question, are some of those ways better than others? Are there better or worse ways to recognize that an incident's happening?
I mean, I think something we didn't talk about is another way that you can find out an incident is having a customer report it. And that is the worst way.
Having someone else tell you. Yeah.
Having someone else tell you. Ideally, we've kind of operated in the like, that is another way that we get notified is a customer tells you. And that is the by far worst, because that means that usually by the time they're seeing impacts in certain systems as a person on a pretty back-end team, the damage has been done and has been ongoing for quite some time. So that means you're way behind, potentially incurring hours of repairs or days of repairs as a result of this. So in the case where you're getting a customer alert, one of the things we want to do in our RCA is, how can we alert, ideally, how can this behavior never happen again, but how can we put in place alerting, monitoring, so that we know that this is happening before a customer lets us know. So I would say customer letting us know is the worst case. Then I would say the best is if you can do what I kind of said of like, if you can catch it before it's at the like, there's alerting that this system has failed, your database has run out of a memory, and those are very bad. You want to have alerting that's like indicating, hey, it's at 60%. Maybe there's a Slack alert that say, hey, this is higher than expected. And you have like a warning level. And that's like, we should investigate. Having an investigation alert is the ideal, I think. And then if it goes up to the next level, that's less ideal, but at least you caught it with automations. And the worst is someone found out that's an end user, because by then errors have really propagated quite wide.
Yeah, I agree 100% that a user telling you is the worst way to find out. I think for me, something that I think is the best way is when the alert is meaningful. And that goes back to the business value of the system. When the alert is tied to, hey, this thing is starting to not provide the business value, or if this behavior keeps up, the business value will degrade, then that's the best way to find out, as opposed to, you know, your database is at 90% utilization. It's like, okay, well, like, what do I do with that realistically? Unless I have a lot of deep contextual knowledge, I might not know what to do with that alert. And so I think that business oriented alerting to me is more context rich and holds more utility. It doesn't hold more utility in fixing the problem, but it holds more utility in getting alerted early, knowing what's happening and where it's at.
Yeah, nothing's worse than finding out some really far downstream effects have told you that you've done something wrong upstream. But luckily, that's very rarely what happens. So talk a little bit about identifying incidents. You know, once you've identified an incident, you know that something has gone wrong. What comes next? What do we do then?
So in an ideal world, the next thing would be, again, an assessment piece of what's the customer impact, right? And what is really going on and who needs to be involved in order to really run this to ground. And run this to ground could be mitigating the issue, could be resolving the issue. It's probably both. But I do think the first step is some sort of assessment piece. Does that answer the question?
I think that covers it well. The assessment piece is complicated because you do want a time boxing to that, because sometimes it can be very hard to root cause. You might have these alerts going off and you're not sure. So I think in that assessment, you want it to be time boxed. Ideally, you can still figure out who to roughly call in. And then I think in that assessment, you quickly need to think about that mitigation strategy. Maybe I think oftentimes we've seen at incidents here is people want to solve it completely. And that's obviously the ideal state. But people forget that triaging, and if you can have a system have degraded performance, or you can silo out certain edge cases that might have made that system non-performant, that often is a very, very powerful thing. Because when you're in an incident and you're in that assessment phase and 30 alerts are going off and lots of people are concerned, you can't really even take the time to figure out where that root cause is. If you can put in a degraded state, you know, some of these things are as easy as an early return in a function, and buy your team time to think, that can be one of the most powerful things in that early stage. So I've found in an incident, you start doing the assessment and you have, if you have several people on, you might have one or two people being like, how can we get this thing to hobble along and have the least customer impact if it has to stay down? Yep. And how can we then get to the salt? Because as the time goes on in an incident, depending on where it's happening, if data corruption is happening, you want to isolate that as soon as possible, because the cost of the long-term repairs are very high.
So you mentioned like all the people who might be concerned, who might be reaching out, trying to figure out what to do next. How do you figure out the right people to actually respond and get involved directly when you have an incident?
I think it's hard. I think this is one of the biggest challenges. I think as a responder, and I'm coming from a data team, but knowing how the data flows and knowing how the systems communicate is important to know who to contact. Because one of the things you think of is, if my system is going off, I need to know who's upstream and who's downstream, and being able to alert them, because the problem could be coming from upstream and the problem could be coming from downstream. So knowing who to call, I think, often depends on, do you know where your system fits into the bigger picture of the business? And I think that does relate to anyone. If you're on the front end and you're experiencing an issue, okay, do you know whose endpoints you're calling? You're a downstream consumer. If you're at Klaviyo, if you're on our event system or like our system, is that coming from an external provider as the upstream? And I should probably notify my downstream consumers that we're in a degraded state, or maybe they're causing degradation because they're pulling from us. So I think it's really important to understand who your team communicates with. We've done tooling to list out who our little hosts talk to, and that can be one of the ways that we can figure out, hey, this is who I should be reaching out to. My system talks to, we have coupons, it's talking to our sending boxes. So I should probably let email team know if coupons is degraded.
Yeah, and I'll just answering this from, yes, that's 100% it. And also, that's why having this special role of an incident commander is so important, because if I'm responding to an incident, it's like my head is totally in that space of like, what is wrong with this system? And like, I'm thinking about the system. To have to think also about, how am I going to communicate with my upstream? Like, it's a lot. And that's where the incident commander can come in and serve that role of like, nope, you responder, worry about the system, worry about mitigating, worry about resolving the actual technical problem. I will worry about the communication and logistical pieces. I just think it's really useful and really important, because that way you don't necessarily need to know deeply. You can also rely on help. But I agree with Ty that in an ideal world, every person knows their upstream, their downstream. You know, they can map out via a diagram, like, here's how data flows through my system and beyond it. Super helpful when responding to incidents.
Yeah, one thing that we experienced in data science was that until a few months back, the data science team shared a single pager duty rotation across multiple subteams. And the data science org was pretty big. It had at least like 4 to 5 subteams, and each team had their own distinct services. And so there was this one single shared pager duty rotation. I think historically, the rationale was to have new folks familiarize themselves with services beyond just their immediate team, which I think worked quite well. But we had an incident that involved one of the more complex services. And I remember, I think I was on call and I did not have a good understanding of the service itself. So to assess the impact of what was going wrong and what was the customer impact, because that service was degraded, I wasn't able to answer those questions very well. So we had to actually page someone on that team itself which I think is the last resort. At Klaviyo, we avoid paging specific individuals on a team. And I think one takeaway from that incident was to either have clear runbooks for each service if you're like sharing a rotation with like other teams, or you could split out your rotations to at least like smaller rotations that have like a good understanding of services that they are being told to respond to. So that is, I think, one of the takeaways we took from an incident, the whole process of figuring out who to bring into the call to resolve the issue sooner.
So you mentioned an important and unique role in part of all of this process, the incident commander. Could you talk a little bit more about what the incident commander does and why that's an important job?
Yes. So the incident commander is a specific role that someone, in this case, it's entirely engineers at Klaviyo, but in my opinion, there's no reason that it couldn't be someone else. A role that someone takes on during an incident that serves to, again, focus on the communication, coordination, logistics pieces of an incident. So their goal is to provide clear coordination to bring an incident to resolution as quickly as possible. So they'll do things like listen to what responders are saying and delegate work based off of the decisions the team wants to make and communicate to external parties who aren't engineers about the status of the incident and ultimately facilitate decision-making to bring the whole team of responders closer, again, to what we would call resolution or having the incident be resolved.
So let's talk a little bit about the other people involved. What's the difference between being a good incident commander and a good incident responder?
I mean, I'll take a crack at that. I think the role of a good incident commander is, as Laura previously alluded to, kind of taking the cognitive load of coordinating the various tracks of work and managing communication to external stakeholders from the core responders. Again, in an incident, if you're the responder and you're getting asked by your PM, you're getting asked by customer support, you're trying to do all that and you're trying to solve the problem, it's very hard to do because you're trying to hold too many things in your head. A good incident commander comes in and quickly gathers what the team that's in the responding state knows, is able to start summarizing that and handle the communication and gathering to allow those individual responders to be able to be very focused on the problem at hand. The incident commander is also the person that can help the team, if they're doing a good job, from kind of like rat-holing into one thing. Like I mentioned, I've been in incidents where the team's very driven to solve the problem, but you've been on for an hour and the impact is still high and it's causing, and when an incident's happening, it actually also starts to cause disruption to other teams in that they're unable to see their own telemetry. So you can take them and have them say, hey, let's focus on a mediation. And then can we buy that? It's asking, sometimes they're said as like naive questions to say, can we keep the system online? Partially, what is the actual impact? And kind of taking them back from when they can get too fixated on one set of problems. So I think that's the role of a good incident commander. And then a good responder is able to kind of silo themselves away from the communication that's going on externally, which also the incident commander should be helping coordinate, and really focus in on their various tracks of work, and then be able to communicate effectively. They don't have to be constantly communicating, but communicating effectively to what they're doing to the incident commander. One of the other really valuable things of the incident commanders at Klaviyo is being able to like actually kind of serve as a scribe for the incident, because I've been in incidents that have gone on for a week. And writing back what you did can help prevent you from repeating tracks of work, that someone comes in and goes, hey, did you investigate this? And the incident commander could say, hey, this has already been done. So we keep this conversation going. It's amazing how valuable that document is to be able to look back and see, okay, these are all the things that were run. The other value too is a good incident commander is recording this, but a good incident responder is a lot of the things that we do, we love Slack here, is posting into Slack of, hey, here's the command I'm running. Here's the thing that I'm running. And the incident commander can aggregate that. So when you do, hopefully you don't have an incident like this again, but we found it valuable to go back. I've looked in previous incident docs and been like, that's what I ran. This is really helpful. I remember these things, and you gain that context. So you want both to be good and you'll have a really positive relationship. One other thing I'd say a good incident commander does is kicks people out of the room. And that is an amazing quality at Klaviyo. And is that people love to help each other here. I've had so many people reach out and try to help out in incidents before, but that can also become a lot of noise. And a good incident commander dismisses people from the call when they're no longer needed. This can be not only prevent distraction, but sometimes people are just trying to be there for moral support, but then they're getting exhausted too. And let's say this is a prolonged incident where a team is responding, you might only need two people on. And hey, sir, be ready in case of backup to replace these people, because that's something else that can happen, is that you don't want the team to be exhausted, because as you get tired, it gets hard to make a good decision.
You brought up the idea of noise, and I think that's a topic I'd like to follow up on. At the end of the day, an incident response, it sounds like, is an engineering solution or potentially a coordination of multiple engineering solutions. And I would say engineering solutions are notoriously, or at least can be notoriously, magnets for differing opinions. How do you typically handle conflicts and differences of opinion during an incident?
I think one of the ones to go to is, what is the simplest solution? And something that people also like, as engineers, we really want to do something in an incident. And I think bias, sometimes a bias towards rollback. So a lot of the times, I think Laura alluded to, a lot of the incidents come from changes, and people want to roll forward often. And sometimes, almost the overwhelming majority of times, it's we should roll back and then figure this out. And that's probably one of the most contentious decisions, because people are really excited about what they probably rolled forward to that and later incurred the incident. But I think you have to bias towards going back to a known state and going back to the, like, reducing the unknowns. Moving forward can add new unknowns. So I think one of the big deciding things when there is a conflict like that is to, well, what are the knowns and what have we done before, and probably biasing back towards that.
All of that makes sense to me. I think what I notice in incidents when people are responding, particularly when an incident is severe and it's impacting customers and everyone knows that, I think even though engineers get this reputation of maybe being super, you know, just want to solve really cool problems and focused on the tech, I think that at Klaviyo, a lot of engineers really do care about customers, and there's a lot of empathy. And that generates a sense of urgency. And I think that sense of urgency, to an appropriate amount, is useful, but it can also be counterproductive. And sometimes an incident commander can come in and just slow things down a little bit and say, okay, a bunch of people have a bunch of options about what we could do. How many of these could we pursue at the same time? And if it's only one, how do we talk together and make sure that we build consensus about what that one thing's going to be? I think that can be tremendously useful, even if it takes a little bit longer. What I put in the training for incident commanders around making a decision is I just put, choose the least bad option with an upside down smiley face. Because sometimes there really aren't clear, good answers. You know, we're sometimes solving novel problems under moderately extreme stress. And sometimes we're going to make the wrong decision. And I think that's really important to call out, as responding to incidents is not always knowing the right thing to do and doing it as quickly as possible. Some of it is making bad decisions and learning from them and making sure you don't make those same decisions and mistakes again. Sometimes that's the best you can do, and that's okay.
Yeah, I think that sense definitely resonates as a data scientist. I think there are times when, as a data scientist, the best you can hope for is to be less wrong rather than be more right. So it definitely resonates there. And on the topic of data science, so Harsh, I wanted to get your perspective here. You've responded primarily to data science specific incidents in the past. So just wanted to get your thoughts, as working primarily on the data science side of things, led to any specific difficulties or complexities in how you actually respond to incidents?
Yeah, I think as I alluded to in one of my previous answers, in data science, historically, we've had a lot of shared infrastructure, and that could be like shared databases, shared deployment pipelines. And we don't always have a clear owner or a clear point of contact for these shared resources. For like the rest of Klaviyo, or like a lot of the services in Klaviyo, for example, our main Klaviyo app, one of the SRE teams owns the entire deployment pipeline. And so if something were to go wrong with that, they were the ones who would like respond to it or like try to fix it. But within the data science team, we don't have a similar platform team or a team that would own some of these shared infrastructure. And so that has caused some issues when an incident happens that affects some of these shared infrastructure. And it could be hard to figure out who should be called upon to respond to an incident happening with our like shared resources, or also figuring out who or which team is responsible for implementing some of the tech debt that comes out of an RCA through that incident. So that has been a difficult or like complex task in some of the data science incidents that I've been a part of. But recently, I think we've worked really hard to decouple all of our shared infrastructure and have more specific rotations that specifically respond to these smaller team-owned resources. And we've always had this debate of whether it is better to have a large pager duty rotation, which is like shared amongst multiple teams, or whether to have smaller rotations or like team-based rotations. I think one thing that is burdensome for a lot of the data science teams is that they're really small. So if a team has like two or three engineers and they have a rotation of their own, then engineers are going to be on call for a long time and very frequently, and that gets burdensome for that small team. So we've taken a compromised approach wherein like multiple teams share a rotation, but these are still related in the product areas that they operate in. And that has helped alleviate some of the issues that we've had while responding to like data science incidents.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's a great segue, because you brought up the topic of kind of the burden on the team. And I know, Laura, you mentioned kind of the idea of people getting tired or being on a call for a long time in incidents. And I think that all touches on the topic of morale, which is what I'd like to go into next. Obviously, an incident isn't necessarily the most fun thing in the world to be in. Something has gone wrong. Customers are potentially being affected, and potentially it's even in the middle of the night to make things worse. So just how do you generally try to keep morale up during an incident response?
It's hard. It really depends on the incident. I think you just try to come off as positive when you're in the incident commander role. I think, you know, there's a time and a place for everything. You can try to make some elements of levity. You know, someone will share the classic, like, there's like a DNS meme that's, it's not DNS. There's no way it's DNS. It was DNS. And someone shares that in. And, you know, like people can add in, you know, maybe something funny to the channel, or someone makes a comment while you're running something. But that can only be done at the right time, because then you could just be like, what is this person doing? Morale is hard, but I think kind of just checking in and being like, hey, like, you know, we all want to get off this call. We're doing our best. And I don't know, I think just being kind to each other is the most important thing to keep the role up. And be like, you know, what will kill the role is like someone proposes something like, we already did that. You know, you don't want to be like, thank you for that suggestion. That's something we've maybe already pursued. We'll add that to the backlog. Because in the end, everyone is trying to solve this thing. So I don't think there's some great tip to being like, oh, when you walk into an incident, the atmosphere is going to be generally morose or distressed. It depends. I guess maybe starts at distressed and goes to morose if it goes on for a long period of time. But I think it's saying like, hey, we're doing our best here. This isn't a great experience for anyone. I think that's actually where a lot of our incident commanders are pretty tenured. And maybe the best thing that they can provide is that been in things like this before, they always eventually resolve. They yeah. always do eventually resolve, and reassuring people can be helpful. I think that be like, well, this isn't the worst that we've had. And sometimes saying that can be good enough to get people through, but it really is tough to balance morale.
The only thing I'll add to that is I also think that, I think Ty, you mentioned this, kicking people out. I think that if something's been going on a long time and morale is dipping, that could be an indicator to say like, hey, is there anyone we could tag in? Could we swap out some folks and help get some new people in here so you can go sleep or whatever? I think that's one of the only things that you really can do in addition to trying to be upbeat and add humor where it makes sense to, and also be realistic. What Klaviyo does is important. At the same time, you know, like we don't build spaceships. We don't make heart monitors. We're not operating on people. You know, I think putting that into perspective can help as well. You know, what we do is important, not to minimize it, but also someone won't die if our system is down for another 10 minutes. That's not going to happen.
I just wanted to add, I love that point about saying like, it's okay to pull someone else in. You know, people get afraid of, there is the first line of defense, and that's the first set of people on the rotation. But after a certain amount of time, yes, they will get tired. And I think when, at least personally, when I've been on a rotation, you feel guilty about pulling someone else in. You're like, well, you know, this is the card I drew. But what, again, something that I like about the culture here is people are almost always willing to come in to relieve you when it is something severe. It's always okay to try to escalate up and go up the chain because you want it in the reverse situation. So you're happy if like, I mean, you're not happy, but you're willing to come in to relieve someone if they need that break. And it is just so, so, so important. And I think that's an awesome bit of advice to raise morale is it's okay to tag someone else in. Like, this is something big. It's okay. And that's that reassurance that I think a really good instant commander can provide. And it's a great point.
Yeah, I've been kind of thinking throughout this conversation about how this is kind of analogous to a medical emergency. There's triaging, you need to stop, you know, stop the bleeding, but you also need to treat the underlying symptoms and you need to make sure you're diagnosing the right problem. But one big difference is the medical situation, it's definitely, well, probably maybe nobody in the room's fault. Whereas in an incident, sometimes it stems from the work that maybe someone involved has done. And I think a big part of maintaining morale and just maintaining a you know, good working relationship is making sure to not point any fingers. Someone might be feeling really bad on that call, and you can really, things can break down really quickly if there's any finger pointing or any blame being passed around. It's really important to remember that everyone's on the same team and like trying to solve the same problem and that you're all working together on it.
That is such an important point. And I just want to emphasize, I think that attitude of being able to look at a change and look at a person and kind of attribute it to that thing is often false. Like one of the first things I said is, you know, Klaviyo is a complex system. Oftentimes, that entire system allowed that thing to happen, right? Like, yes, maybe this change happened, but where were all of the safeguards that should have been in place to prevent it? And so calling out any one thing, I think, is not only is it reductive, it's also not helpful. It's not having like a learning mindset, which is really what you want in incident response, is to be learning and to have it be generative. So plus 1,000 to that point that you just said.
Adding even to that, oftentimes when it is a change, it's owned by the team and was approved by the team. Like, we don't ship things out in the silo. And yeah, so I mean, I feel if it's something that happened that our team did, I think we should all be sharing that burden. And I think too, on pulling someone out of that, like it, when you do that, and everyone probably on this call has shipped something that didn't go well, you sometimes need to lift up that person because no one's doing it out of malice. No one wants to be in there. So they're already feeling it. The best thing you can do is to be like, hey, you know, I've been there and we all learn from these. These are the most valuable learning moments. Actually, something early on at my tenure in Klaviyo was talking to our CEO, Andrew Bielecki, and he said, if you see someone going to create their almost first big incident, should you let it happen because they can be such good learning experiences? Not that that's the goal, but he's like, there is something that when we do interviews as a manager, I'm sure Laura, if someone can't speak to the biggest incident that they've created, it's a real red flag actually, because we've all done it. And those are the biggest learning opportunities. Again, you don't want that to be intentional, and we don't intentionally have those incidents, but we really do. It really is a very valuable thing. And so it shouldn't be something that someone's ashamed of, because if you create a culture of blaming, then they'll hide it. And that's infinitely worse.
So you just hit on something that we've talked a lot about during this episode, kind of this learning mindset and how do you learn from incidents? So how do we do this at Klaviyo? How do we learn from incidents here?
So I'd say that there's two main ways that we learn. One is that every incident, we have a postmortem, also known as an RCA. I don't like that term, but we use it. And the point of the postmortem is to go over the incident, yes, and what we did, but also to think about what went well, what didn't go well, how did we get lucky, what are some things that we learned about this system that we didn't know before, and how well did the incident response process serve us? So the focus is, again, what did we learn? You know, how can we use that going forward? And so that's one, that's how we learn by an incident by incident basis. But then we also have an incident analysis program where we look at incidents in aggregate and say, are there areas where we're seeing a lot of incidents? And how might we be able to explain that? Is there anything we want to reinforce or change at an organizational level to kind of make change? And so there's two levels, I would say, of learning there, the individual incident by incident, and then the organizational looking in aggregate.
So something that is like slightly related is basically for Black Friday, Cyber Monday, our team started is owning a new database. And so one of the things that we wanted to do was learn from incidents. So one thing that our team is doing is taking up older RCA documents of incidents that were like centered around databases going down or like issues with databases, and trying to understand what are like common causes for like an incident to happen that could be like related to databases. And we were actually able to like dig up a few RCA documents and go through them as a team, trying to understand how we can prevent like our database from running into the same issues. So I think the documents that come out of incidents are really useful even after the incidents have happened, or even if they don't bring about a big change at an organizational level, individual teams can still learn from how folks during the incident went about debugging this issue and like trying to learn from it and prevent it from happening again. So that's also something that is useful when like learning from incidents.
It's awesome to see the learning systems in action like that. And I think that actually is a great segue to our very typical final topic on a podcast episode like this. We always like to close out by giving practical advice. And I think in this case, let's maybe keep two different types of people in mind. Let's say maybe someone listening to this episode who's looking to set up their own protocol for responding to situations like this, or someone who's entering the rotation and potentially about to respond to an incident for the first time themselves. What's one quick practical piece of advice you would give to someone in that situation?
I'll just say PagerDuty has incident response documentation. It's really good. I recommend that people read it.
I think to the new responder, I would say it's okay to escalate is the other thing. Like, that can be another stressful thing, is you're like, oh, this I'm on, my manager going to be worried, or this going to be reflected. People are always happy to have a new body on the rotation, because you had four people on, now I'm on every fifth week. So I'm okay if it gets escalated, because I used to be paged for it and you're now joining my rotation. So it's okay to escalate. If you feel unsure, that'll help you gain your confidence. You still are likely able to respond and everything, but it's okay. If you're unsure, escalate up to someone that can provide backup or reassurance on what you're about to proceed with.
Yeah, I think for me, I guess, don't be afraid to create an incident in the first place. For like teams who are creating their protocols around incident responses, I think even if the issue is small, or even if you think it could be an incident in the future, people should not be afraid of creating incidents which are like exploratory, or like when you're even not sure that it would cause any customer impact in the future, it is still okay to create incidents or like internal incidents for that. That can keep communication centered in one place and you can have a history of, you know, communication to look back to if it escalates to a point where there is like customer impact. So yeah, for teams that are like setting up protocols for like the incident process, I think it's important to encourage folks to not be afraid of creating incidents in the first place.
That's all excellent advice. Thank you all. And thank you all for being on this episode. It was wonderful talking to two of you for the first time in this setting. And Harsh, wonderful to have you back. Thank you all so much for your insight and for everything during this episode.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that, unfortunately, is all the time we have for the episode this month. Again, thanks to the panelists for coming on and talking to us about this, to me at least, fascinating topic. This episode, as all episodes of the Klaviyo Data Science Podcast are, was sponsored by Klaviyo. Klaviyo's intelligent marketing automation platform makes it easy for marketers to centralize and use every piece of their customer data to deliver hyper-personalized experiences across all their channels, increasing conversions and revenue. If you want to know more about Klaviyo, the best place to go is klaviyo.com. That's klaviyo.com. If you liked what you heard on this episode, please subscribe to the Klaviyo Data Science Podcast. Please leave us a rating. Please leave us a review. Anything along those lines. It all helps us in the algorithm. It all helps more people hear content like what you heard. And obviously, I think the most important thing is, if you know someone who would be interested in hearing about incidents, about responding to incidents, about just generally doing software engineering and data science work under pressure, feel free to share this episode directly with them. That's the best way to make sure that other people hear content like the content you heard today. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, the best person to reach is me. The best place to reach me is my Twitter account. That's Lawson_M_T, LAWSON_M_T. Thank you for listening. Have a great month.